So before we spoke on some specific topics, is there any kind of discussions that any of you would like to, you know, discuss, or either some topics or some questions? Yeah, the question was, is that what we discussed about children will apply to any dependent. So the whole aspect of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness is to understand the principles, because the principles are going to be maintained from now all the way through to perfection. Principles are always there. Principle means, in this case, would be what is the essential point, what is the purpose of something, the purpose of an activity. So the purpose always stays, though we may see according to the situation it may change, or it may be completely different. Just like the purpose of eating is to nourish the body. So if we're very sick, we may see we are eating some diet that is, you know, very, very light. Maybe it is some very mild, you know, foodstuff, or no spices, no ghee. Like this, something you might eat when you're sick. So then, but that's the detail of the principle. But when you apply the principle, you have to see the time, place, and circumstance. So in eating, when one is sick, if one eats what a healthy person could eat, one will get more sick. So then that is not the proper, that's not the purpose of food. One may think, well, food is for eating. So whatever you eat, however you eat it, that's not the problem. No, you have to see the purpose of what you eat. That is for nourishing and maintaining the health. So then if we understand that principle, then it's very easy for us to spend a few weeks eating one diet and then slowly, slowly get back to a normal diet, till we're eating just the opposite of what we were eating when we were sick. So someone who is not very knowledgeable may be thinking, well, I don't understand, this is confusing. It becomes very confusing for me, because I see that you say, you know, one should eat, but one time you're eating, you know, just some soup, and another time you're eating very rich foodstuffs. So how does one work this? That's very contradictory. You know, like in the discussion in Bhagavatam class this morning, that we're discussing principles of dharma, and saying that the material or the condition considerations are there, but the purpose is transcendental dharma, or doing activities to please Krishna. So therefore we may not be able to do just any activity for Krishna, but one that we in our conditioned nature are able to do for Krishna. But that's dharma, because that is then dovetailing our nature in Krishna's service. Point is to please Krishna. So if we can do it by dovetailing our nature in Krishna's service, then that becomes religion. But that should not be mistaken with ordinary religion, even though it looks the same. So this is what Lord Chaitanya is saying. But then sometimes it's pointed out, well, Lord Chaitanya said Varnashram is external. And when he was discussing with Brahmananda Roy, he rejected that. But we see that Lord Chaitanya and his associates all followed Varnashram Dharma. Because he rejected it as what is the ultimate goal, what is the perfection. Varnashram is not the perfection. Pleasing Krishna by our service is the perfection. So whatever it happens to be, according to one's nature, one gives. So if one understands the principle, there's no confusion on why Lord Chaitanya would reject and at the same time he would follow. So that is the whole idea, is in spiritual life we have to see the principles behind what is there. And then from that, then life becomes easy. See, in knowledge, there's illumination. And in ignorance, and there's darkness. So when we know what we're doing, then we find that things become very clear, very simple, very easy, very pleasant. So one should not add things or complicate life more than one can understand. So one may say, okay, so life's very simple, why add in all so many things? That's true. But one has to also understand what simple is. Just like in the beginning, I remember it struck me that when Prabhupada went to San Francisco for the first time, he had been in New York, I think, for like 1 year. Then more. But since starting ISKCON, he had been there 1 year. Then I think Mukunda Maharaj, he went to San Francisco. And he started preaching there. But things there were a little bit different than the atmosphere in New York. New York is very strict, very regulated, you know, more official. So when Prabhupada got there, they had some little, you know, storefront also, and some little quarters upstairs for Prabhupada. And all of the devotees there, they were all hippies, you know, long hair and their funny clothes and doing whatever they're doing. So they didn't really know anything or practice anything of the culture of Krishna consciousness, you know, all the etiquette and the what one would say is varnashram. But they knew Krishna is God, I am his servant, my business is to serve him, and the best way is by chanting Hare Krishna. That each and every one of them knew. So even though they knew nothing else, they started there. So that is simple life. Simple life starts from the top. As you come down, it gets more complicated. Right? Sometimes you'll think it's simple here, no, it's the other way around. You want to make life simple? Then that's it. I am Krishna's servant. Krishna's God. My business is servant. Do some service. And engage in Krishna's service. Then, as if we want to make this more sophisticated, we can do, but we have to maintain that principle. If we lose track of that, then there's no meaning. There's nothing special about following rules and regulations, or, you know, as Maharaj Arhat, you know, did. There's nothing special about not following rules and regulations. Because if it's in the material world, it's nothing special. Only if it's in connection with Krishna, then it becomes special. Now, as we see in Dwarka, there was this pastime. I think it was Narad Muni came and Satyabhama, I forget how it worked, but then something came that she was upset with Krishna or something, and she gave Krishna in charity to Narad Muni, who was there. Narad Muni then thought, okay, I'll take him. He was making him do this, that, and so many things, and Krishna was doing. And then, you know, so she thought it was a nice joke, but then when she found out that Narad Muni was serious, so now he had gotten Krishna in charity, now he's taking Krishna, because he's his property. He belongs to the Brahmins now. So then Satyabhama became a little bit worried. You know, when she actually understood he was actually going to take Krishna, then she became worried. So then she said, no, please, what can I give you? Like that. So he said, you know, after much discussion, he said, okay, you just give me Krishna's equal weight in something valuable, and then we will go. We will trade you Krishna for some, you know, something of value. So then Satyabhama thought, no problem. So they went, got some gold and this and that. And they brought a big weight, put Krishna on one side and put all the gold on the other. And the scale didn't go down. Krishna was heavier. They brought all their ornaments, everything. Krishna still didn't go down. Then called all their maid servants. They all put whatever they had. Still didn't go. And then she was getting really worried because she was putting so much, this, that, everything. And it was so heavy, but still it wouldn't balance Krishna. So all this is going on, and Narada Muni says, well, you know, you can't put anything forward, deals off, I'm leaving with Krishna. So she was very worried. So then, at that time, Rukmini came. So when Rukmini came, then she asked what was going on and saw Satyabhama was very disturbed and all that. Then, you know, it was understood that she had given Krishna in charity to Narada Muni. And all the queens got worried. Everybody got worried. And, you know, then finally in the end, then Rukmini thought, okay, take all this wealth off. All the gold, all the jewels, everything off. They took everything off. Then she brought one tulsi leaf and put the tulsi leaf on the other scale. And then the tulsi leaf balanced. The tulsi leaf was heavier than Krishna. So then Narada Muni accepted, took the tulsi leaf, left Krishna, and he went. So then, in this way then, you know, Satyabhama's pride was reduced. So that, what was the original point? Got into, huh?
What is purpose eating?
Oh yeah, purpose.
From eating, we should.
I don't know how that train of thought went that way, but oh well, it's a nice story. Problem with the Puranas, you have to have a very good memory to remember where you were. Yeah, I don't remember. But on that point is, so we have to know the purpose. Being able to do something, the ritual is not enough. And especially if we're therefore imitating the ritual. If we imitate the ritual, then we actually don't get anything. Otherwise, if that worked, then Radhakund and Navadvip would be full of Paramahamsas. Because they're all wearing little pieces of cloth and walking around and chanting like the six Goswamis living at Radhakund. Then they would all be very advanced devotees. But instead, the acharyas call them sahajyas, that they're just imitating. So one has to be very careful about that point, that one doesn't do something just to imitate. But one should know what is behind it. So then in these aspects, the principles are the same. That is why, because in the spiritual realm, things aren't rules and regulations, but it's rasa. So therefore, parental rasa then is one particular tattva, how it works. So if one can understand the principles of the rasa, then one finds that these principles apply wherever there is a similar aspect. Detail may be slightly different, but that is why it says mother, father, king, teacher, you know, presiding demigod, because the principle is the same. Is in the Vedic culture, just as we, you know, naturally accept we have seven mothers, then in the same way as we understand the parental rasa is greater than just the biological parents or the immediate family. extend, you know, the grandparents or aunts, uncles, like this. But anyone who can deal in this way, where one becomes a dependent, their rasa is actually parental. So the same principles apply, though maybe one changes the, one may change the way one does it. Like the king talking with his subjects doesn't have to talk in simple language for children. He can talk normal language. Or he doesn't have to, you know, pat them on the head. But the principles of giving shelter and seeing to the needs remains. So then if one understands this, then one can apply in all circumstances. Means if one can be, you know, say if one can be a good manager, like a king, one can also be a good parent. Or one can be a good teacher. Like that. It's all connected. It's the same rasa. In the Vedic concept is children have to be raised in the atmosphere of the parental rasa. That has to be the guidance for them. But at some point, we see that for the boys in the home, it's difficult because of familiarity. They get familiar with the parents and don't listen to them. Even though the parents are saying very good instructions and is very well-meaning, but the child doesn't take it very seriously. Because everything else is automatic. Right? You come in the house, you can sleep whenever you want. You know, you can get something to eat. So one doesn't think what's going on, why, you know, what is the purpose of life. So in that atmosphere, there's a point at which the benefits are very minimal for the child. Because they're not maturing, they're not growing, they're not broadening their understanding. So then when they go to then under the care of the teacher, then the teacher is also in that same parental rasa. But because there's no bodily attachment between either one of them, then the child will become observative of what is going on around him. He doesn't take the atmosphere for granted. That is also one of the ways that one sees whether the child actually fits properly into the educational system, is whether they take that for granted or not. Because even if they're with the teacher and they take it for granted, they won't learn anything. So when they're in that atmosphere, then one can train them to be observant and to observe and understand how God works in everything, what is their position, how they relate to others. So these are the things to train. So the rasa is the same. So the same care, you have to take care of their physical needs or their psychological needs. But in that atmosphere, one can get across the transcendental needs, deal with the spiritual and developing of the intellect, which will be very difficult for boys to learn at home. So then that parental rasa just carries from one to the next. And then from there, that child then will take shelter of guru, that continues that, or take shelter of other authorities. You have the management, whatever it is. So then it's natural that rasa continues. That is the where protection is. So if one understands the principle, they're all connected. It's just a matter of the art of application. You know, the art of management or the art of teaching or the art of raising the children. But that is all based on the principles of the Vatsalya rasa. So the principles are the same. You know? I mean, it's just like there's this very popular in management. There's this one gentleman in the West. No, many gentlemen, but some more or less gentlemen. But they write books on management. And then the ones that seem to work better, that aren't just tricks, then talk about understanding the principles behind management, having some character, like that. And then you can switch it back and forth between managing your, you know, multinational, corporation, or managing your family, because the principles will be the same. That you just have to know the art of one and the other. That's all. So. Remember one topic Ganga Prabhu mentioned was just he had asked something about speaking to very small children, on how you would speak, what kind of dialogue. So generally what I've seen is the most effective is that you speak normal language to the children. Though one will use simple words that they can identify with, especially as the vocabulary is very small. But if you talk with them and treat them like they're a normal person, they mature very, very quickly. One can see a child dealt with like that by 3-4 years old, they can relate very well with adults. Well, if you talk baby talk, this, that, sometimes you see they never relate with adults. They never, their psychology will be many years behind. So it's important that one deals with them, but just in the language they understand. Just like when we preach, we don't, all we do is change vocabulary when we talk with different groups of people. Depending upon who they are, we'll talk more simply, more elaborately, but still we talk normal. So in the same way, if you talk normal with the kids, but you just use vocabulary they can understand, that helps a lot in maturing the child very quickly.
I think the children can perceive that you make them feel there's something different, and they take advantage of that, thinking themselves more and thinking themselves something else. And therefore, they take advantage of that and they try to do that to get a leverage to get what they want.
Mm.
That's one aspect.
Mm. Yeah. You hear? Could hear? He was mentioning that, Ganga Prabhu was mentioning that if you talk to them differently, you know, like in their own language, then, you know, then when they perceive that they're different, so then they take advantage. Because if they're special, then naturally, then they can get away with many things. But I think Prabhupada, I don't remember where, but he mentioned that. He mentioned that there's nothing that an old man, there's nothing that a child can't say or an old man can't do. He mentioned this in relationship to once he was preaching to some gentleman, you know, not too old person. And he kept saying, making a point. And then the person would, you know, turn the point over and try to speculate, and Prabhupada say it again, you know, and relate it again. And then they'd do it again, and then again Prabhupada would say. And after many times of this, then Prabhupada just leaned across, because the man was sitting just on the other side of Prabhupada's desk, Prabhupada sitting this side. So Prabhupada leaned across the desk, grabbed the person by the shirt, and pulled them across the table, and then explained to them again, very clearly, what he meant. And then he let go. And then the man was very nice. And then after, you know, he was smiling and talking. And, you know, they parted very nicely. So the person, he wasn't just a kid. You know, he was some kind of respectable personality. So then they ask, how could you do this, Prabhupada? You know, this and that. And, you know, can we use this technique and stuff like that? You know, this is bold preaching and like that. And Prabhupada said, no, you cannot do this. Says, you're a young man. Says, I can do it. I'm an old man. And then he said, there's nothing that a child cannot say or an old man cannot do. So we see children, because of their innocence, they'll say anything. You know? But the important point to notice here is it's they may say anything, but they can't do just anything. So that means they have to be taught the proper etiquette. It's also very important to understand that they perceive very much what is the mood behind. I don't know if we discussed this before. This may have come up in an after-class discussion. Technically, when the child is born, then they have the nature, they're on the platform of anamoy. So that means they're on the sensual platform. So there's said to be not much difference between them and an animal. You know, they just eat, they sleep, they just run around. So just as we see that the animals are very sensitive to our moods, like I remember we had this bird. It was in a cage. It would sit there very peacefully. Everyone had walked by, it wouldn't move. But when one or two particular boys walked by, the bird would always move to the other side of the cage. And they didn't do anything, they just walked by. You know? But later on it turned out these boys were very wild. You know? At the time it wasn't seen. But their mood inside, their desires, and that they had a lot of material desires, those boys. So the birds would move. You know? Just they didn't trust them. So in the same way the children, even though they don't necessarily understand what you've said, or what you say is all right, but they subconsciously pick up what is behind what we're saying. So even though we don't say anything, or they catch the mood, they catch what is our purposes. Though it's unconscious, but that will start to establish their foundation or their values. Oh, interesting thing came up today. We're looking for it. Someone sent this from Europe. It's from the Charak Samhita, which is it's one of the main books on Ayurveda, one of the authoritative books. And it mentions about the nature of the child, not the karma. I mean, no. Was it the consciousness of the child, not the nature? Means the consciousness of the child, it gives four elements, that are in relationship to the Ayurveda, of what will affect the child's consciousness. Like before we talked in length about conception. So conception is one of them, and then there's three others. The one is, what were their unfulfilled desires in their last life? The second is whether they performed pious or impious activities in the previous life. The third is then the consciousness of the parents at the time of conception. And the fourth is what sounds they hear when they're in the mother's womb. Like Prabhupada mentioned, that is a tradition in Bengal. Especially when the child came, I think to the seventh month, they become conscious. Then the mother would sit, spend long hours just reading Bhagavatam to the child. And that would be, we must remember, Prahlad Maharaj was instructed by Narad Muni in the womb. Like that. Also, Astavakra, he had studied from his father in the womb. So it's not that they don't pick up. So they hear these things. They hear the kirtans, the bells, transcendental sound, transcendental conversation. So even though they may not, be as elevated as Prahlad, he can understand the words, but they'll understand the mood. So if the parents are talking about Krishna conscious things, that will very much affect the child. And if they're talking about material things or so many anxieties or this and that, then I think it also mentions, which is interesting, the music the parents will listen to, the clothes they'll wear, music, clothes, what they'll eat, that's kind of obvious. In the womb, while they're in the womb, it all affects them. Like that. Never quite, especially like what they eat. Like that. In the Vedic culture, in the more at least the aristocratic families, the cultured families, when the mother was pregnant, she would not eat any chilies, anything that's too sour, too hot, too bitter, you know, any, because these are harsh, they're rajasic. Then they'll burn the child. Like that. So they're very careful. You know? Because it's the tendency, like in the West, you know, eat whatever. They have all these strange things they want to eat. But they'll eat them. But some of them are too rajasic. They'll give trouble to the child. So these things affect. Any other questions? Or? Something Pankaj Swami? Is
you can tell at the time of puberty of the child, it's in touch and
being able to understand the consciousness of the parents at the time of puberty, the child. It would probably become the most prominent then. But otherwise one can tell all the way through. Because you see, like let's say a very gentle child, when they hit puberty it's very mild. There's hardly any change. They can go right through the whole. Generally, once they're very gentle, they don't have. You don't see any problems with them till they hit like 17, 18. Then they just space out. They don't get wild or like that. They just space out. So, like 16, 17, 18, they just kind of like, you know, they go somewhere else. You know? But if they're very wild from the beginning and all that, then when they hit puberty, it'll be even more wild. But then when they hit 16, 17, that's when they calm down. You know, if they're, you know, if you deal with them properly. It basically means, what he's meaning is just on how much material desire is there. The younger children are, how do you say? The younger children can be more easily, how do you say, in the home environment can be dealt with much easier. So from 11, at least for the boys, it becomes more difficult. Like that. Girls are different. There's a slight difference in the... They mature differently. What you'll... Like a girl in the Vedic culture, by 11, 12, could be married. That means at that age, she has to be able to run a house. So she can cook, she can take care of the kids, she can do those things. Because she's grown up in the house, she's seen her mother dealing with other brothers and sisters, she's seen all her aunts and uncles, how they dealt with the children, and all these things. They're able to deal very nicely. So, I've seen is that girls, like when they're 9 years old, they can be very serious in spiritual life. They can chant nicely. They can be very, very peaceful, very mature. While boys won't attain that maturity generally until they're like 18, 19. The same kind of seriousness. Like it's many times seen, like if girls are in all-girls school, they do very, very well in their academics. Because just because of the seriousness that they have at a younger age, just by nature, they will learn faster. But for the boys, then more time is given because there's more that you have to get inside their head. They would have to learn so many different aspects of consciousness and all these things because they have the time to take care of that. While, as we had discussed before, by the intelligence, how that would work on the girls, is they're very expert in raising the children, giving shelter to that children, giving the time and energy to the children. And then the boys can be trained more on these analytical areas. Though the girls also can study, they would study, but so because of this difference we see, then it's generally recommended that there's a difference of 6 to 10 years between the age of the boy and the girl. Few reasons are there. One, as we mentioned before, is that this aspect of always never keeping exactly equal, always creating a little bit of something, seniority in the man. So this age is one way of doing it. Because then naturally the girl's been under the care of the father, then she's under the care of the husband. And because he's older, a little bit of that mood of shelter and all that then comes through. And that's, so from the very beginning that's established. Another aspect of what we just discussed on this maturity is when a girl, it's 12, 13, they're thinking very seriously about material, the realities of material life. You know, if they get interest in a boy, they're thinking, you know, marriage, this, that, living, so they're already thinking of these arrangements. Well, the boys don't start to think about those until 18, 19 years old. For them, it's just nice, they're with a girl, it's fun, it's pleasant. But they don't, there's no seriousness there at all. There's no question of anything serious. Maybe serious to hang around together, but they're not thinking of money, house, this, that. They don't think of these things. So then if you have a boy who's 19 and a girl who's 19, as far as material sophistication goes, the girl is going to be 6 years ahead of the boy. The boy will not be able to keep up very easy. So it'll be hard for him to also lead in that relationship, to help, because he's not as together. So when there's that slight difference, then when the boy starts thinking like that, then they'll work together. Yes?
Why in our movement, the tendency is not to give husband to the girls.
To give?
To give a husband, to get married. The girls, when they are 12 or 14 or whatever. But still the tendency is that they study, like they do in the West. You know, they just study, and then they have a relationship here and there, and then they get pregnant for someone, and then, you know, why this culture, Vedic system, is not established? We are not establishing this system.
The question is why we're not establishing this culture, Vedic culture of the girls at a younger age getting married, but they go on studying and this and that. So, because one also has to work within the purview of the cultures that one is living in. So, therefore, it's not accepted generally in most cultures that one can get married at an early age. Most countries, it's, I think, 18 years old is like the legal age. So I think there are some countries that allow 16, I think, for the girls. I don't know about the boys, but at least the girls, 16. Some, you know, they're considered more liberal countries. In the Vedic, it would be considered more conservative. So like that, then the girls will keep themselves busy studying and like that. But they must have good association. Because when it says shelter means the protection. It means that there is good association, that if the how you say the mood of support is there, you know, there's good feeling is there. Especially for the girls, then the father has to give a lot of support like that, and the mother has to be very diligent in training in the fine points. So between these two, then one can train nicely. You know, we do the best we can. We have to be practical. But the point is that it should still, the principle of that when one gets married, ideally that is the first time that one has established a relationship. Because the first one is always the one that one remembers. Girl, you know, there may be the present one, and there may be so many in the middle, but the girl will remember the first one. It's always more special, unique, like that. So, therefore, in the Vedic culture, because that experience is special and unique, therefore it's given some priority. It's taken as more, it's protected, it's more sacred. So therefore, the girl will be in an environment that when she does get married, she will get that experience. Because that experience then lasts through the life. You know, well, if this is, you know, number 10, then it's not as powerful. You know, okay, we have to be practical. But that's why they'll be in an environment where they cannot be exploited.
For some devotees, they may feel like, well, we don't want to have children, we like to be just friendly and companions. That's why we are being married. Is that something you like, or can you say something?
Yeah. We discussed, could you hear? The question was, is that Prabhupada mentioned that one of the purposes of being married is to have children. And that said, like, family life without children is like a desert. So, but we see sometimes that devotees may get married but not have interest in having children. So is that, you know, okay or not? Or we discussed that to some degree on the first day. But the main point was is that from the first generation, then, I mean, we should make a distinction here between first and second generation. With the first generation, then first generation means those who become devotees as adults. Means they've already been, you know, through the ringer, you know, and then they come in contact with Krishna consciousness. So many times the experience in their dealings, you know, between men and women before was very rough. So they don't really have much attraction or attachment for the whole household scene. But because of lack of training and having grown up in such a liberal environment, they can't give up the habit of being in such association. So then in that kind of condition, but it must be seen that both parties have that mentality. You can't have one doesn't want any children and the other does. They both have to not want. Then it's okay. It's not the best. But, you know, if their experience was such, then you'll find, okay. Sometimes also just they didn't have themselves so much relationship between boys and girls, but their family situation was so bad. Just between their mother and father, between them and their mother, and things like that. Then they don't even have an idea how to run properly a family. They wouldn't know how to do it because you do what you've been taught. So unless you get taught something different, by nature one's just going to do what one picked up basically subconsciously. So unless you are taught something else to change it, you know, like habit is changed by practice. So unless there's some another teaching and another practice, it won't change. What you went through, that's what you'll do. If you fought with your mother, then your children will fight with you. You know, because you don't know, your mother didn't know how to behave to keep you in control. And so you don't know what is that behavior. So with your children, you'll act in the same way that your parents act. And then your children will fight with you. So unless one learns the mood, the change that, it'll be very difficult. But it's very important that if such a thing is there, the two parties decide that, you know, okay, we need this association, we're too attached, but we don't want any children. Then that has to be understood. That also means, along with no children, is zero, you know, physical sense gratification. I mean, they go hand in hand. Because those who are having children, that is only reason that there is any contact. So if they're not having children, then that contact is not there at all. And if it's just, well, we'll have the contact but not the children, then that's not, it'll be very difficult to get out of material consciousness. Very difficult. But we generally, you'll see with the second generation, they don't have so much this problem. I mean, it means our own second generation. The girls are very much girls, the boys are very much boys. Like that. Because they've grown up in a more proper and pure environment. Question is that someone may just, how their parents dealt, they were fighting kids and this, and so then, you know, we see one child and he does the same with their children, another one thinks this is crazy and doesn't do with theirs. But it also in the question comes the answer. It's because they thought. They were conscious. If they never thought about it, it'll just go as it is. But if you think, then you think this was wrong. This was the problem in the family. It's because, you know, father was doing this, mother was doing this, kids were doing this. And one thinks about it, then one can change what would be the natural habit. So for them, it doesn't just come in subconsciously, they're actually conscious of it. So then they accept what they want, reject what they don't. Then you can change. That's why for the purpose of training is to make you think. It means from Shravanam comes Kirtanam. So Kirtanam means you know. You don't speak things you don't know. At least one shouldn't. So by hearing, then one speaks. So if one can change, that means there's been contemplation. And from contemplation comes realization. So the whole purpose of education is to create an atmosphere in which the child contemplates. Child should know why. You know? It's just like we see very many times in the Vedic way of dealing, the teacher wouldn't just speak, but they would speak in such a way that they would bring out a question. I give an example. It's one student asked the teacher, you say God is everywhere, but how do we perceive that God is everywhere? And he says, okay. He says, you go bring a bowl with some water in it and a big piece of salt. So the student brings the bowl, pours water in the bowl. And then the teacher says, okay, now put the salt inside. And they put the salt inside. So the teacher says, you can see the salt there? He says, yes. Okay. So then he says, now put the bowl away, and tomorrow then we will discuss your question. So then the next day, then student comes and he says, okay, bring your bowl. So they bring the bowl, and then he puts it down. He says, okay, is the bowl there? Yes. Is the water there? Yes. Is the salt there? And he says, no. So he says, where is it gone? I don't know. So he says, so taste the water. So the student tastes the water, it's salty. So he says, so is the salt there? He says, yes. But can you see it? No. So he says, that in that same way, God is in everything. He's entered everything, but you can't see. So like that, they bring out the ability to think like that. And that's the Vedic system, is to invoke. It means when it's very small, you have to put in information, but once a basic amount is in, then you can start to invoke. Like that. Just like we say chanting is not an imposition on the mind. It's the natural activity of the living entity. So only in the beginning, then there is some, strong regulation and some determination is needed to establish. But after a while, then we see it starts to naturally come, because it's the natural nature of the soul. Anything else? Yeah.
The condition that the child experiences before birth, is it more important than the training they receive afterwards? Or if you've got a child who's born wild, you can train him to be to proper standard even though he doesn't have to.
Question is that the how much, what is more prominent for the living entity, the experiences before birth or the experiences after? So even if the child happens to be a little wild, when they're young, can they be trained differently? See, the experiences before birth, then those are what basically set the consciousness. So the whole purpose of human life is to develop the consciousness. So by proper training, then one can develop that consciousness, one can change that. But one has to find the teacher who can deal. Because even though the principles of education will remain the same, it is rare to find a teacher who can deal with, a student who is very, very overly active or very wild. Can be done, but it's a slow process. Many times children are wild when they don't get a lot of attention. Many times if they feel this, sometimes they're just like that. So even no matter how nice the parents are, they're wild. But sometimes the child will come to the parent and, they have funny things to show. They got sand in their pocket, or they got a stainless steel cup full of shells they found out in the sand pile. To them it's important. To us it's not very important. But to them it's very important, but not a whole lot means their level of importance is also very small. So it's not that they bring you the cup full of shells to look at and they expect you to sit down and there'll be a 1-hour dissertation on, the whole cosmic, cosmology and how, the shells and this and how did they get there and why. No. Well, they just want to show you. And then you go, oh, very nice. And then their attention span is about half a second and they'll walk off. So then if we are busy and we don't give that half second, then they'll feel frustrated, because for them that their shells are very important. So you just say, oh, very nice, and then they go off and do something else. So then if you don't give, then many times they go off, they'll be frustrated, they're stat, and then they may do something a little crazy. And when they do crazy, immediately they get attention. And now they get a lot of attention. So then they figure out real quick that the wilder I am, the more attention I get. And the child is mainly looking for attention. So we either learn how to have that patience and give it to them and keep them from getting wild. Because otherwise to reverse the process is much slower. It can take, I don't know, I remember experience in the school, it would take years. Really wild kid, 5 years. Medium wild, 3 years. And, you know, not so wild, 2 years. But it takes them a long time. Basically, they just do so many wild things, and then if you deal with them properly, then after a while they get frustrated with being wild. And then by nature they just, or by accident, they do something nice. And as soon as they do something nice, if you deal with them properly, then they figure out now they can get attention from being nice, and then it goes the other way. But it's slow to get their trust, to get their attention, to sit with them, talk with them. It can only be done by a strong relationship. You have a strong relationship with them, they feel that there's some care, then they'll change. You know, but they'll change because of that person. Like that. And then once they've changed, then they can relate with more people. You know? But whoever can deal with them on that personal way, then they can change them. So it can be done. Like that. Is that? Does that answer or doesn't answer?
Half.
What's the other half? Oh, which is more important? That half?
You can bring the one that's without previous training at the same point. Or if a person is born with good qualities, then if he has less training,
See, if we look at it from the other aspect, from nature, you know, like what one's conditional nature will be, then that deals with the what activities were there in the previous birth. Then, at the time of death, if the son performed shraddha rites, so that good deeds come through, then the family one's born in, so that means consciousness of the parents, and then association after birth. So that each one of those is one quarter. So by association, then one can change very much. You can change the nature. So even though one may be born, you know, one may have a brahminical nature, but if one grows up with everyone talking about business, then they'll use that, their intelligence for, you know, in thinking about business. So the association is very important. So the Vedic culture, that's why they were very careful about the whole institution of marriage, why the girls were protected so much. They were given so much shelter and care, is because then they could properly train the child. Because if the girl has proper care, naturally she's very religious. By nature, they like ritual, they like the regulation and that. So then, then they'll want to give that to their own child. So then things like that, if they hear that, you know, if you read Bhagavatam to the child in the womb, then it's very good, and, you know, go visit the temple and hear the kirtans, and they'll just do that, even if it's just for the benefit of the child, you know. So then all these things add up. They help a lot. So Vedic culture would give so much emphasis on the the proper care and training and shelter of the girls, because then your next subsequent generations are very high standard. Of the girls not very well trained, then next generations can't be very good, because the man can't give the, for, especially for a young child, can't give the same input that the mother will, you know, when they're very young. When they get a little older, then the influence of the father and that becomes more and more prominent. But when they're young, very young, then the influence of the mother will be more prominent. Does that make any sense? No. Kids don't really, like you see, wherever they grow up, that's home. So the parents may have some other value, you know, but for them that's home. So if someone grows up in a, let's say, a poor environment, but no one ever is talking about being poor, the child will not feel poor. So then if he's in a simple environment, he's satisfied, or if he's in a wealthy environment, he's satisfied. He doesn't care. Because for him, he grew up in a normal atmosphere. Doesn't matter what it was. But if they're in that environment, they're happy with it. But if the parents are always talking about money, worrying about money, and anxiety about facility, then the child will think that there's something wrong. And then he understands that that's more important. I've seen many times children from very, very poor backgrounds where the parents worry about these things. The child may be first class through the education, the gurukul, like that. You know, nice, everything. But then when they get a little bit older, one of the first things they worry about is money. First things. So it's not that by being from a poor background, it's not natural, oh, they're from a poor background. No, they're from a poor background that worried that they were in a poor background. Right? Just like if you take someone from a wealthy family that's been, let's say, by generations wealthy. To them, having wealth is normal. So a child from that family can live in a very simple atmosphere, because also for him, that was just normal. So if in Krishna conscious we live more simply, they do that, because for them it's normal. But if someone's come from like the nouveau riche, they are thinking, oh yes, they have to prove that they're rich. So then it becomes very difficult for such a person to live in a simple environment, because he always has to prove that he's, you know, in a prestigious environment. I've seen that also many times, you know, we have the grass huts. So kids from very, very simple village, you know, pious villages, you know, Midnapur, someplace, everybody lives in a grass house, it's normal. They come and they see our grass houses, they think it's very nice, nice grass houses, you know, and they're happy to put their child. And people from very wealthy families, they come and they think, oh, this is very nice, wonderful, you know. They say, you know, it looks like Shantiniketan or something, you know, and they'll think, yeah, this is nice, it'd be nice to have my child grow up in this environment. But I find the ones that come from like lower middle class or middle class backgrounds, you know, and they're not necessarily, you know, so God conscious, they can't put their kids in that school. It would be below their dignity that their kid has gone from a brick building to a grass hut. You know, what would their relatives say? What would their friends say? You know, it would be completely loss of prestige. So very much the environment of the house and also before the birth has effect, you know. That's why the Brahmins had little but didn't want to get more. They didn't care because it was normal. Or the Kshatriyas, they could have the whole kingdom, they could give up a whole kingdom. Therefore the Brahmins would take sannyas, the Kshatriyas vanapras, but the Kshatriyas, the Vaishyas, Shudras, they would just stay with their family. Because they were always trying to get, wanting more, anxiety, you know, due to the mode of ignorance. So in the Vedic culture, you see that it would go like that. That answer, or three quarters. Question.
You're talking about the importance of getting a child to question and to ponder it. That seems to militate against the traditional marriage structure or authority system.
You all understood? Question was, is that someone who asks, we see it, I mentioned the point about the child contemplating, wanting to know why, things like that. But we see that sometimes when you're dealing with management, then if you question, then, you know, unless it's, you know, how much or how to do it, that kind of question, that's all right. But if we're getting into why, then many times you can get yourself in a lot of trouble. So, see, there's also an art to asking why. So it says, tad vidi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya. That three aspects have to be there. You have to want to know. It just says it starts. Just try to learn the truth, right? So generally when we look at that verse, we'll see question, you know, submissive inquiry and service. Though the verse says three, because tendency is to miss, just try to understand, just try to learn. Right? That's the first qualification. You want to know why. But it's of interest. It's not that you in particular want to know why, because it was going another way and you liked it that way, so it's changed, so why? You know? It's not the traditional kennel. You know, it has some. Then one has to want to know, one has to ask submissively. It means it has to be, I don't understand. So the whole idea is, if I don't understand, there's a good chance it's because I'm the fool, not because the other person is. You know? They're in the position, they're doing it, I'm not. So there's a good chance that I'm the one that doesn't. I don't know. Especially if we are in a teaching environment. And there must be service, because if there's no service, one can't understand. One thinks one understands, one doesn't, because there can be no realization unless there's service. It won't work. We may make our plans and all that, but it's just the way it is. Just like fire is fire, you know, water is wet, you know, sugar is sweet, and realization comes from service. So by performing service mixed with devotion, you get realization. When samvit shakti, which is the knowledge potency, is then mixed with ladini, which is service, you know, devotional service, then sandini reveals the knowledge. This is Chaitanya Charitamrita. So that's just the way it goes. So we may like it or not, but if we're not doing service, then we question. Then, so generally someone who's doing nice service, speaks and asks in a gentle way, doesn't get a bad reaction. Generally you see the ones that get bad reaction are ones that aren't doing any service, they just like to talk. God has given a mouth, and they will exercise it. And, you know, if you want to hear it or not, that's your problem. You know, they are going to exercise their right to speak. You know, so, and there's no service, there's no submissive inquiry, so therefore you don't get a proper reciprocation. And service has to be done somewhere, it doesn't necessarily have to be done to the individual involved. You know, it has to be being done to the mission. The service must be there. So when there's study, there's service, There's inquiry, there's realization, knowledge comes. See, because there's, like you say, a revolutionary means he's not part of the system. He's not trying to work with the system. You know, standing back from the system, distancing himself, and then saying so many things. That anyone can say. Anyone can. That doesn't take any qualification. You can go out and get any man off the street, he can do that. So it's not that we're so intelligent we can see faults. This anyone can see faults. You can ask a kid, are there spots on the moon? No, they can say yes. So finding a fault is no great intelligence. Understanding how to work with others to try to correct that takes intelligence and takes qualities. One has to have good qualities to do that. You know, so if we're part of the system and you're doing service, then it'll work.
I think on the same line, sometimes it's simple to find a problem, but it would be nice also to find the solution to the problem. Like many people concentrate so much on the problem, they get lost, and they lose their own faith and their own inspiration. But if somebody is intelligent, even as a manager, I can concentrate, okay, for every problem there's a solution. Let me concentrate on the solution to the problem. If I can do something, if I can contribute something, or if something is too big, I can't do anything. I think that's more constructive.
If
we concentrate on solutions,
Just how you say? Just like, you hear? Saying that, there's a comment that if finding the solution, I mean finding the problem and only finding the problem, working on the problem, then many times one can get, you know, lose faith, get disillusioned, and, you know, get demoralized. So one better to work more on what is the solution. Like that. Of course, one has to understand the problem, but if the emphasis is on the purpose of finding a problem or a fault is to find the solution to that problem, then one will always be enthusiastic because one will always have something to do. Because in the material world, it's full of faults, so there always will be something to keep us busy. But if to find fault just to find fault, that's the mode of ignorance. This is the quality of the Shudra. He's always laments. I think Prabhupada breaks the word down in the Sanskrit. It means, it comes down to the root word of lamenting. The Shudra means he who always laments. So then, finding the fault, then solve that, then has some benefit. But to otherwise, not. One can see, it's just like before, they came up an idea that in the community we have some children who have difficulties. You know, either the family situation was very rough or they're, you know, somehow or another. They're just a little wild. They don't fit into any of the schools here. The parents have service here. They like being here. Family likes being here. So we need a situation for them. So then the idea came up, you create a school that's just only for those children. You know, it's like the foreign legion of Gurukuls, you know. You come, we ask no questions, and then you're trained. So then, that was, you know, a possible solution to a problem. We have nice devotees in the community who have kids that don't fit into the educational system. So what to do? So then, this is the solution. So problem is there, solution is seen. But then some other community members then felt, you know, no, this is not good unless you have, you know, professional psychologists and all that to work with the kids and this and that. Then, you know, it won't be good. like that. The kids will create too much trouble. So then, that's it. The plan stopped, and the kids are still here. Kids still have no engagement. They still run around. But this community, one, didn't come up with any other solution. And two, the kids are at home. Somehow, under the being at the home, you don't need to have a professional psychologist. And if the kid, you know, runs around all day and bothers all the other kids of the project, that's perfectly all right. But if you take them all, put them in one place, and get some devotees who want to work with kids that have difficulties, oh, that's a problem. So we have to be very, very careful, like he said, is that finding the fault is okay, but then we should also try to help find the solution. Yes?
But what we are doing here, actually what you are doing here, is psychology points. Means the knowledge that you are giving us is full of psychology, psychological understanding and advice and that. So it means that our culture and what Prabhupada gave is already perfect with everything, even with psychology inside, isn't it?
Yeah.
So at this point, why these people, they are looking for psychology, professional psychology, because they don't believe or they don't understand our culture, or is there some other problem?
Uh-huh. Question is then... And those who means our own culture has so much psychology in it. Teachings of Srila Prabhupada are dealing so much with the psychologist. So the question comes is then, what is the need of outside psychologists? So basically, our own culture can take care of anything. Because in the Vedic culture, everything lived. The Vedic culture has a place for everyone. Just that, you know, if you're too wild, then you stay a little distance from others, like some of the tribals. It wasn't that they weren't wild, but they lived in the jungle. And they would do many valuable things. They would pick herbs and, you know, bring musk and, you know, special sandalwood and, you know, special things that are from the jungles. Just like even in Golok Vrindavan, then the, was it Palindas? There's a tribe of Palindas that live on the other side of Govardhan Hill in the jungles. So they provide all of the jungle materials to the residents of Vrindavan. But, you know, they're a little more wild, so they live out in the forest. But they're there. So like that, everyone gets their space. And those who can deal and work with them, work. And those who don't, don't. So it's our own culture can deal with everything. Because the living entity, if we look at it, just that we're in the material world means we're nuts. If we weren't crazy, we wouldn't be here. Right? So that means the first point is everybody's crazy. Right? So the only solution to everyone being crazy is God consciousness. So that if you can give that to someone in a way they can understand, that's the real medicine. That's the medicine. And you give that time, that attention. Everybody is looking for some time and attention. Right? That's the first thing that you complain about in authority. They're too busy. You can never get to see them, never get to talk to them. You know? Then that's one of the first things. So in the same way, if parents are too busy, or you know, you don't have parents or something, you don't get that attention. So if somebody will give you that attention, as we mentioned before, whether it's the parents or whether it's the teacher, whether it's the authorities, as long as it's in that parental mood, that mood of shelter, then it will correct slowly the anomalies that are there. You know, it's just natural. Like that. I mean, we've seen very wild kids come into the school. We had one kid come into the school. And parents had put him in the school. They had been involved in Gurukul before themselves. Kid was put into the school. And then he had a lot of problems. You know? Questioned everything, this, that. You know, it's like we would sweep. You know, why do we have to sweep? You know? I didn't sweep in any other Gurukul. Why have to sweep here? Explain everything. You know, it may take 45 minutes, but you explain and finally he understands. And once he understood, then he'd be sweeping every day. But to him it just seemed, you know, why, I never did it before, it seems crazy. But once he understood, then he'd do it. And like this, one thing after another, you know, fighting. One kid says something, there's a fight. So you explain, you don't have to fight. Someone says something, you talk nicely, it doesn't work, you come to, you know, someone else. And then it'll be worked out. So slowly, slowly, like that. 6 months later, some other Gurukul teachers that, you know, used to teach the boy, they came to the school. Then they were sitting down under a tree, just, you know, looking at the Gurukul. And then this boy walked by from a little distance, not, you know, just far enough where he didn't notice them, but they could watch him. And they watched him walk from the front gate, in the front gate, all the way past and then around and to the room. He walked by other boys. He walked by plants. He walked by other things. And he didn't break anything, hit anything, kick anything, bite anything, say some nasty comment to whatever went by. And they were so impressed, they went back and, you know, sent any other kid from the school that was crazy. Like that. They were so impressed. So it's just a matter, if you give that time and attention, right? Just like kid comes up to you and says, you know, you tell him you're supposed to sweep, and you tell him, you know, and he comes back and says, no, why I should sweep? You know, what's the normal? Because I said so. You're supposed to. Like that. You know, you may speak strongly, kid's young enough, he may do it. But he wasn't answered. You have to explain it till they answer. So I remember that kid, it was one time 2 hours. It took 5 discussions of anywhere from 45 minutes. First one was 2 hours, then I think another one was an hour and a half, and then some were 45 minutes. And after that, then he was convinced, and he would sweep very nicely after that. But it took, you know, it probably took 10, 12 hours. But then he'd do it. And then it was never brought up again. He was there, I think, 2 years. Never came up again. He was regular, did it nicely. So it was explained. So that's the point. If you put the time, it works. So that's the importance. That's the meaning of guru. That's why it's called Guru Kula, the place of the teacher. Just like, you know, the house is the place, you know, Grihastha means the householders, means their place, you know. So Gurukul means place of the teacher. So it's their place. You go there, and you live with them, and you. So it has the parental mood.
So it depends on the teachers and the training that they can give.
Yes.
It's not a question of outside psychologists.
No.
Yeah. No, this is important because, you know,
yeah.
What we read, what he say, is against these people.
Yeah.
You know, basically. It's against. Now we are taking advice from them. You know, for me, it's like become crazy, you know. We are doing exactly opposite.
Yeah.
So that's why.
Yeah. See, sometimes, the dealing with the question is why we would use outside psychologists, because Prabhupada speaks against them. Is basically the outside psychology means the father of it is this Freud, one German character. So he developed his understanding from dealing with crazy people. He never studied normal people. This is one small problem with the Freudian philosophy. Is he didn't study what normal people were like. He only studied crazy people. So then he came up with the whole point is it's all sex. And he has all his weird ideas, perverted this way, perverted that way. So (clears throat) We know from Prabhupada's books that he said if someone is too lusty in this life, next life they're born crazy. So it's natural that the crazy people are going to be lusty. So, of course, we must give credit to Freud that he understood this. But this still, there is a small fault that he didn't study the people who were normal, who were not lusty. So he superimposes that on everybody else. So that's a great problem. So therefore, in it, it will be seen that it's frustrated sense gratification. So therefore, their solution to any problem is engage in the sense gratification that you're so hung up about. You know, you're in anxiety, you have all these problems because you're not enjoying your senses. That's it. This is also the philosophy of New Age. It's the same thing. So the solution is not that. The solution is Krishna consciousness. But one has to be convinced of that. It means in the previous life one was too lusty, so one was bewildered. One lost the intelligence, right? From the lust, then bewilderment. From the one memory, then the intelligence goes, and you fall down. So these are people who have fallen very badly. So they get very crazy. So you can correct craziness by good association, by care, and by training. Though, depending upon the case, it takes longer. Now, if somebody is very clinically, you know, like what you call clinically crazy, then the psychologist may be good, because Freud dealt only with crazy people. So they have some idea how to deal with clinically crazy people. But if they're not clinically crazy, they're just wild or untrained, then generally good association and Krishna consciousness and service will correct them. Though it's slow. You know? Like I said, some of the wildest kids, it would take 5 years before they would come to the zero point. You know? Zero meaning from there you can become positive. You know, it takes 5 years to wind them down to zero. And then from there you can start properly training. You know? But that's generally older kids. That's not younger. That's teenagers.
You were speaking about making a point about misutilization of position. Like the boy who doesn't want to sleep, you can tell, you just do the yoga, and then, you know. We can use the same argument for the management, and we can use the same argument also in relationship with people and husband and wife.
Mm.
Like I was saying, no, you listen to me because I am the guru of the house, or I am the boss, I am the man. Or in management, you can say, you have to listen to me because I am the manager, or I am the head department, or without giving proper explanation. And people will work for some time, but then they'll just connect themselves to you.
Yeah, it's very important. It means it has to be a cooperation. But to organize things, someone has to be in charge. That's just so like that it has to work. But the better one can explain and work, just like it was interesting. I mean, the only thing I haven't read that much, but the only thing I read of any interest where I could gain something from, let's say, the life of Napoleon, right? You know, there's books on it, but I only found one incident that I found of some use, is that before he became who he was, I think he was in the army. He was like a career person. And he was a small, you know, person. And he was going down the road somewhere. He was looking for some place. I guess he got lost or something. And he was going along, and there was some people working, you know, doing some labor, lifting something or something. And there was some guy supervising. And they were all sitting there and that, you know, and they were trying to lift, and the supervisors there yelling at him and this and that. So then he came along, and, you know, he was watching. And then after a while, he asked the supervisor, you know, what's going on here? What's happening? He says, well, these guys lazy, they can't move this thing and all this and that. Like that. And so he's looking at it, and then he figures out basically it's, one, they're not being told in the right way, and two, there's not enough of them. You know, it's a little too heavy for them to move. So even though he's a small guy, then he just went down where they were working. You know, they were in a hole or something, and then he gave some other idea and he helped them get it out. And then he walked off. You know, then he just kept on going. So he would get involved with the people he was working with. So that's how he was able to do what he did, just because he would move with his men. We also see Alexander. He had that, you know, the story with the water. The story, they were in the desert, because they were going through the desert and coming to India. And they, I see. There was no water. None of the troops had water. Everyone was thirsty. They found some water somewhere. And they brought it in a helmet. One helmet of water. They brought it to Alexander and gave it to him. Said, you know, you're a leader. You take this water. So he just took the water and threw it on the sand. Said, men don't drink, I don't drink. So from that, then, they become very indebted to the men. Like that. So this is how he conquered. It wasn't just because he was good at saying, you do this, you do that. Because they would work. So if the time is given, that shelter is given, then any of this rasa will work. Parents will work, managers will work, teachers will work. It'll all work. That's it. The principle is the time given. You know, so if the parents give the time, that means personal time. It doesn't mean that you have to be doing something else. You know? Yes. Yes, but that value is given to us. You heard? She was saying about, it appears that we need to come up with different values depending upon what the position is, parents or managers or teachers. Because the whole purpose of Dharma is to train in values. Because the first values are learned from the mother. That's why, that's the whole foundation. So in the Vedic culture, so much emphasis will be put on protection of women, because then the child's first values are very strong. And then from there it can be developed by others. Just like we were mentioning in the previous class, as the child sees the mother, then sees the father, then sees outside, you know? Like that. In Anamoy, they just see the mother. And then Pranamoy, then they start to see mother and others. It just slowly starts to grow. And then Manamoy, they see the community. You know. Then Gyanamoy, they understand they're not the body. And then Anandamoy, they understand I am servant of Krishna. So that's why you, in the Dharma Shastras, you'll see, in Bhagavatam, so much of this is given. How Prithu Maharaj dealt, how Ranti Dev dealt, how, you know, Yudhishthir, all these. That's why they're there. The reason that Puranas are the scripture for the Kali Yuga is that it gives the practical example. In the other Yugas, then you could just give the philosophy or give the principle, and the people are so intelligent then they could apply it through everything. Like that. Like you see so many times in the Puranas even, that someone comes in contact with Guru, they give a very simple instruction. And then that keeps them their whole life. They may never see the Guru again. Because it wasn't uncommon. Like a sannyasi would come through, be, you know, there in the village a short time, and then move on. So they would get that instruction. Like Narad Muni, how much he instructed Dhruva. Right? Basically told him to chant the Lord's name and fix his mind on the Lord. That's it. He didn't give more. But because they were very intelligent, they could take that principle and expand it for all their situations. Like all the Vedas expanding on one thing. Always remember Krishna, never forget. That is the principle. Then from that, then so many sub-principles come, and so many details and all that. So in the Shastras, then, it tells, so the stories in the Kali Yuga, then we need to see how it's done. We need to experience the mood that it's done. So then from reading the Bhagavatam, then we see, like, you want to know how is your parent, or how does a manager or teacher act, then in the Bhagavatam, so much example is there of the mood, of how they would deal, how they would do, how they would interrelate, what were their own values. And then because of that, I mean from that, then we can apply it in our own life very easily. That's the purpose, it's there. It means out of all this Puranic stories, I think there's 4 million shlokas of Purana originally. It means the Apurusha, it's spoken. So out of that, then Vyasadeva compiled 400,000 of the most important into the 18 Puranas. You know, Puranas, Upapuranas. There's only 400,000. Still, it's a lot. You consider Bhagavatam's 18,000. You know, and it's 18 volumes, so it's you know, 400,000 is a lot. So then, from all that, then, when he was told, take the essence of everything, all the Vedas, the Upanishads, the Vedanta, you know, all the Dharma Shastras and the Nyaya and everything. What is the essence of everything? Then he put that into 18,000 shlokas. So whatever is the essence of all the other things is there. So the most important stories, most important examples, like you may not find Prithu in other, or they'll be very small. Like you see in Bhagavatam, the Ramayana is very small. You know, a few chapters. You know, Mahabharata comes up here and there. You know, a little bit in the first canto, a little bit in the ninth canto. You know, then 10th canto, there's more. But something, something. I mean, Mahabharata's 100,000 shlokas itself. So it's the most essential. That's the devotees, they read the Bhagavatam, and from that you understand the Pandavas. Then if devotees read the Mahabharata, then they go, hey, it seems to be different. Yes, because the Bhagavatam was the stories of the Pandavas written for Paramahamsas, and the Mahabharata was written for, you know, Dvijabandhus and Shudras and friends, you know, all these kind of people. Because they're more interested in hearing the politics and the dirt and the, you know, the lust, the greed, the envy, the anger and all that. So the it's slightly different, you know. It's written as, you know, more like a novel. Yeah. So if we take the Bhagavatam, then we see all answers are in the Bhagavatam. Because all principles are covered there. Not all details, but from the principles in the Bhagavatam, if from there, then you go to Mahabharata and take out some of the dharmic aspects. But within the mood of the Bhagavatam, then it works. But if you ignore Bhagavatam and you go to the Mahabharata or go to the Dharma Shastras and take them out, you won't be able to apply them because you won't understand. Because that was written for someone who either understands it by living in it or has been trained in it, or someone who has heard, you know, the essence through the Bhagavatam. So by studying the Bhagavatam, then one can get what one needs. One can get the mood, how it works. Otherwise, there's no life. You know, we didn't grow up in the Vedic system. Without the Bhagavatam, we won't understand the Vedic system. What time is it now?
6:30.
6:30. It's already late. Now, question comes is now... what should we do next? Is there anything to do? Should this be continued? Because basically, is just as points come up, we can discuss. As we see today, it can go, you know, many ways, because they're very much connected. You know, how to manage a family or manage a kingdom based on the same principles. You know, that's why I always find it funny is that, you know, a kshatriya is a manager, because you got to manage the house also. So it's doesn't, you know. So they're all very similar. So it's like we can either continue this, like this, or, you know, or I don't know, or some, yes, what is it?
Are you planning to go on to Vanaprastha
like that? Can. Like that, though it'll be quite short. It's because those things are very easy. You know? Just like Madhvacharya, he writes a padati for sannyasis. It takes up half a page. You know? But then, you know, Hari Bhakti Vilas, which is about this fat, is written for the grihasthas. So the complications are not coming in detachment. They're coming in becoming detached. You know, that's where the complication is. But we can try, because, yeah, try. Yes.
But maybe before there was an idea like you could have separate meeting with all the rules and separate with all the languages.
Oh, I see.
That's an idea,
yeah.
There is something which is particular.
Yeah. There's also that idea if that would bring out any more. If there's, see, because sometimes there's questions that may not want to be asked in a mixed audience. So if it would be worthwhile to have a meeting just only the men attended, or one that just only the Matajis attended. I know that happened in Hungary. So we spoke basically, you know, similar kind of things. And then once a whole group of ladies came, they had some other questions. Like, I don't know if that's... I don't know. Yeah, it's getting... Yeah. But I mean, otherwise then, you know, the other thing is we can either speak on that Vanaprast sannyas, or we can, there was a request to speak something on just for those who are interested in Naistik Brahmacharya, you know, who are Brahmacharyas, who wanted to know how to continue. He's not interested in that one. So what to do? Any ideas?
That's the only choice.
I mean, if there's another choice, maybe there's something else. Otherwise,
I'd like to discuss and find it. It's a lot of interest in the subject of being practicing application of
the Varnashram.
Yeah. In this kind of
class.
Because it's always talking about development.
Ah, yes. In other words, who's in control and who's got the money? Let's get down to reality here. That was a very funny thing in Hungary, because the culture there is they're you know, they're from the Huna stock, so they're, you know, by tradition, by genes, they're, you know, quite a wild bunch. So whatever you would talk, it would always come back to this question. You know, who's in charge? You know, okay, you've said all this, but who's in charge? You know, it would always come back to that.
The discuss.
I mean, who is in charge?
No,
I can't be in charge. I have enough trouble with my 20 madmen.
No, spiritually you are in charge.
Oh, that's another thing.
Then you will get also the money. Slowly. It's just reaction.
Gotcha. So what to do? See, I'm not very... talking, you know, heating the air, free heating, like that, I can do nicely. But when it comes to, like, organizing a meeting or, you know, taking votes, then it gets... I get shy then, you know? If I'm just talking on philosophy, I can say the most outrageous things. But when it comes to this, then I get shy.
Yeah, I can do that for you if you want.
Yeah. This is where you feel, because I don't know where, because I was thinking only 4 days before, on Saturday to end. I want to sit here, have a seat, give me the pillow. So then after four, then I thought, well, that's it, Saturday. But then somehow when I left, I felt that it, no one was like, fully satisfied. So then, I don't know what to do. Yeah. You can speak to the chairman here.
The feeling of dissatisfaction I'm experiencing is that I find that not only you are our leader, you're the sannyasi, but what I felt is over these lectures that you've actually exposed the, you know, the Varnashram system. You've exposed all these things threadbare. And I feel it's very unfortunate a lot of people didn't come and attend these lectures. And what you're saying, actually, there is no problem. There is no social development problem, issue, as you pointed out. It's not an issue. They can make it an issue, but if they understand things in the right perspective, then they understand it's not an issue. And then we can begin to work, you know, very cooperatively. So that's why I'm saying this, but I stress to I could hear them all over again. And then make everyone else come. Just like as you notice, the people that are saying all these things, they're not here. They're not coming. So
that's why we can be so bold and say whatever we like. Yeah, maybe too spicy. You like Mexican food, I think.
It's in the Chatri Ras.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. I feel that what you're saying, or what the other people say, what other people are saying, is, you know, we've got to do Varnashram. No one understands what it is.
No.
Then the second question comes, once you understand what it is, are you ready to do it?
Yeah.
This is the second part. Yeah. Are you going to do it once you know what it is?
Yeah, because if you really get into social development, and we're talking about, because generally I hear it's a very interesting thing, it's, you know, reality. It'll mean many times we comment, like, what I'm saying will be nice philosophy, what about the reality? But, yeah, let's talk reality. Reality is you're worth what you can do. So if you can only do 2 hours, 3 hours of kind of a half-baked job, you know, you're worth about 300 rupees per month. But you have desire for 7,000-8,000 rupees per month. So where's the reality? So this is the problem. See, it's nice to talk and philosophize and not come to a solution. Because the solution, the problem always comes back to home. That is the problem with it. So these kind of topics, we can go on and on and on until another topic comes up. Like that? You know, if there's another issue, like no one was talking about this before, you know, we could talk about the gurus of the GBC or, you know, what. So we had something else. So until another issue comes up, then this will just stay there. Because so one has to distinguish between, do we just want to discuss issues because that is of interest? Because, you know, it gives mental speculation. You know, many people get involved. The Brahmins like to speculate, the Kshatriyas like to, you know, the power, you know, the Vaishyas like to, you know, who's got the money and all that kind of thing, and the Shudras like to lament. So everyone can get together on an issue, you know, and yell and scream and, you know, get a little bile flowing. It's good for the health, you know, the bile secretion and helps digestion and, you know. Also, discussion is important. It means this devotee should, because devotees want to know. That's why they joined. You know, they joined because they were dissatisfied with the material world. They want to know. But we have to spend the time. You know, if we get so busy trying to figure out what's going wrong, but don't spend the time to discuss. But that discussion has to be for the purpose of understanding. See, that's why. That these kind of things, the philosophy, it has to be discussed in a brahminical mood, because it has to be. Can't be a motive, right? There can't be a motive. Like I'm not discussing these things because there's some. Like one devotee wrote this whole book, very nicely done book. I don't know, hundreds of pages, quotes and research work from Prabhupada's books. Nicely put together, did a lot of research, though it wasn't fully complete. He was trying to represent the Indian culture, and his wife was Indian origin, but hadn't lived in India. So some few fine points were lost. And the whole thing it was called Kanyadan. I don't know if anybody's come across it. It was showing the importance of in the Vedic culture, protecting the daughter, giving the daughter in charity to a good husband. In other words, the Brahma marriage, which means there's no dowry or anything. It's just this. And so many things. And then in there he also talks about polygamy and this and that. And then talks about, you know, some things about children and so many things. But it's all related. Very nicely done book. Then someone told me afterwards the reason that it was written, because the devotee wanted to marry a second wife. And he wanted to prove that it was okay. So he did so much research, years and years of research work. You know, just to prove. So that's not the purpose for discussing philosophy or dharma or varnashram. It has to be that there's a system, it's God's system, it works. So we have to figure out how to make it work. So if that means we have to adjust or what that means, then we have to be willing to do that. But if we have a problem we don't like, you know, one temple president said something to us like that, so therefore our involvement is to make sure no temple president's ever sent, then it will be limited. We can voice that, we can give our realizations, we can give what problems we had, but the discussion of it and what should be done should be left to others who can look at it more optimistically. You know, otherwise, if it's subjective, then it becomes it won't come out proper. That's why the Brahmins and the religious kings, they would organize a society, and then everybody else would then train their own family members in that. But the overall was done because they had nothing to gain from it. You know. The kings were just, that was their duty to establish the social structure. And anyway, they were going to leave. As soon as the son came of age, they went to the forest. When the son was old enough, if he could handle it at 16, father went to the forest. If it was 20, father went to the forest. Whatever it was, he went to the forest. So he's going to lose it anyway. And then and for the Brahmins, it's the purpose of it is that everyone has to be satisfied, everyone has to become God-conscious. So then to become God-conscious, you have to be able to engage your nature in Krishna's service. So therefore one must be able to understand one's nature and find a position in society for that nature to work. But one has to be realistic. One has to, Prabhupada said, we have to be willing to work as hard as the karmis work for Krishna. So that means they put in time, they at least put in 8 hours a day. Ordinary man, 8 hours a day. You know, okay, we're here in Mayapur, we don't have to ride on the train 2 hours to Calcutta and 2 hours back every day. You know, some people in Krishnagar do that every day. We don't have to do that. But we have to be willing to put in that time, you know. And those who are leading, those who really make it in the material world, they put in more than 8 hours, you know. They'll stay after in the office, they'll be out of time, they'll be doing it. Or if it's their own business or that, they're not working for someone else, or their own management, then they'll be doing all day, practically. Except, you know, a little time for Krishna consciousness and reading or associating or, you know, a temple program. But they'll put in more time. You know, they won't have to get away from it. They'll always be with it. So then that has to be done. You know, or if you're dealing with the brahminical thing, you're a teacher, then put in the full amount of time. But otherwise, it's not reality if someone will get the full amount of money for being a teacher, but they'll only teach 1-2 classes a day, and otherwise I'm too busy, I can't do more. Okay, so you're worth, you know, full load is 5 classes a day with preparation. You do 2 classes, so you take 2 classes worth of money. You know, unless you're a PhD professor and what you're teaching is so essential and wonderful. You know, but like that, we're not realistic. So the karmis have to be realistic. You know, except Americans, but because they can buy everything on credit. They can have nothing and get everything on credit. Buy now, pay later, you know. But the material world demands realism. So realism means, are you doing something to get what you're worth? That's real economics. You know, we talk freedom of economics, and that means we can't talk freedom as, you know, we should have freedom to do this and have freedom to do that, but at the same time, is you can't have a department, is if they can get a brahmachari to do, you know, and he'll cost, you know, 1,200 rupees, and a grihastha will do less work and it'll cost them 4,000 rupees, he can't get rid of the grihastha. So you can't say communism on one side and capitalism on the other, you know, to fit whichever, you know, gives you the right support you want. So realism is realism, and it's very stark. So we can talk that, because the Vedic culture deals with that. It's not the highest culture for nothing. So then, that's fine. If we want to get down to brass tacks, we can do that. But then we must be willing to understand that. Brahmin, whatever he gets, he's happy. Kshatriya will get it. He'll do nice service management, it'll be taken care of. Vaishya's going to make it himself. He doesn't care about anyone. Only the Shudra has to be maintained. So if the question is, no one's maintained, no one's this, that, fine, but accept your Shudra. Accept that first, then we talk. Just like Shankaracharya, anyone wanted to talk philosophy, fine, but first take sannyas. That was his point. First take sannyas, then we'll talk. You know, that's reality. I'm not dealing with material nature. You're sitting there engrossed in your karmakanda and everything. Take sannyas, then we can talk Vedanta. Otherwise, how you'll talk Vedanta, you know, in your position? So accept the position first. And Shudras aren't independent. They're given something to do, but they're given shelter. But they have to work. And they're submissive, they're loyal, good quality. A Shudra is you hear the qualities of a Shudra. I mean, practically no Westerner can come up to the standard. Shudra has such good qualities. I mean, you come close to it, of a real traditional English butler. An English, well-trained English butler would be on the level of the Vedic standard of a Shudra. It means if he was, you know, pure vegetarian. Intelligent, loyal, working for whoever they're working for the best, you know, thinking how to develop. Because if who they're working for prospers, they prosper. It's like a family. Shudra's part of a family. You have a business, they work for you, they're part of your family. The Vaishya, he'll support them. Their daughter gets married, he'll make some arrangements. They'll take care. But then the reason that they take care is because they endear themselves so much by the service attitude they have. Not that they come for 3 hours and start demanding, no. Those people, it doesn't work. They don't fit. So we may say, yes, Vaivarnashram doesn't work. That's because we're in the mentality of the tribals. We should be in the jungle. Because those that belong in the cities or in the culture, then they fit. Because they're either living simply and don't care for more, managing the whole thing, making money hand over fist, or helping those other three. You know, full time. And if you don't fit into that, then you have the tribals. And they're independent, they do what they like, but they do it out in the forest. So reality is there. Because we may say, well, this, that, we're devotees, but reality is there. You go to Alachua, they got their job. They're not putting in 3 hours a day. They're doing their 9 to 5 if they have an outside job. They pay their rent.
I think, Maharaj, another problem is that many devotees, they are habituated to think to a shortcut. I can just go 2 months and collect money selling candles and make a box, or I can somehow cut corner. But the law of nature works that if you plant the seed today, then after 3 months you will get the harvest if you put the water and if you work constantly. Yeah. It's not that you put the seed today and in 15 days you want the harvest. It doesn't work. But many devotees, they are habituated to think, I'm smarter than everybody else. I can do everything very fast. I can get around somehow some trick. But that doesn't work all life. Mm. Sometimes maybe work.
Yeah.
And also as we become old, you know, when you are 60 years old, can you imagine yourself going selling candles into the bars or paintings? You know,
yeah.
It doesn't make sense. So one has to accept this position, yeah. As you said.
Good point.
But another point again.
Yeah.
That to answer to Pankajangaru, the fact we are discussing here, we are already creating something. Then somebody doesn't want to listen, what can we do? Those who listen will get the benefit. And in order to create something and start something, first has to be created in mind. So unless we understand properly what we want to do or what we want to try to do, create values. So how we going to do it. It's not going to happen by somebody else. It's us.
I hear it again and again until it comes fixed. Then they know. Then they can start to implement it.
Yeah.
But it's not Maharaj's job. It's our job to approach him. He's a
right.
And
so
ask him.
Maharaj is offering, so it's not Maharaj to bring the people. It's we have to bring, tell everybody else how important to listen to Maharaj so we can clear and have a proper understanding so that everybody can progress. If we want to establish Varnashram Dharma, that's the way. If somebody wants, maybe not everybody wants, but those who want, if everybody understands.
Maybe it is also point to discuss when it's Mark or Pentapartner on any discussion to show any leaders whether you really want or not.
Right.
You want to live in jungle, even so called Mayapur, or you want to live in temple. And fulfill Srila Prabhupada's desire. Yeah. Because, you know, we can twist our philosophy, we can create new dharma, we can create new society, and everyone is okay. No. But like Maharaj presented, even to be Shudra, it is so high quality. You have to be so honest, you have to work so hard, so to speak about everybody. Then I think this awareness, this discussion is very important that we should really know you really want, you really understand. I think that I'm sure if we'll present to most of us in Mayapur, what is Varnashrama Dharma, I doubt if mostly devotees are ready to accept. Because usually we try more, I think, get like give. Sorry, I feel that this is Kali Yuga, and usually we think of how much I can easily be Krishna conscious and get devotional devotees. I don't want to criticize too much, but I think there is some nature, easy life. If it's facility, I will try and live easily. If not, I have to hard work. But usually we're working only by pushing. Nobody's working just from morning to evening because he enjoying.
Mm-hmm.
It's very rare.
Yeah.
But usually this Varnashrama or system is creating such atmosphere that we have to follow part of the Varna. And this is not some freedom, this is a duty.
But eventually, see, the law of economy will work by itself. See, it will come to one point that this artificial system we have created so far will break. You know? And then who will survive? Those who really want to work hard, those who are really sincere Krishna conscious, those who understand their position and they fit into their own slot, and those who are not, they will just drift away. I think what you say ultimately works. Can I answer?
Yeah, go ahead.
I think what you say is a great value, but ultimately it starts from our own self, and it has to start from our own self. Like each one of us has to be responsible and do what you say, become very dynamic and become very strong spiritually, understanding value. And when we firmly believe in that and we establish ourselves into that, in Dharma, then everybody else also will get inspiration. It will be like a contagious disease. But if we wait, somebody else does it, or the GBC does it, or the MAC does it, or just somebody
still
else does it.
But this is two things. We cannot say, oh, let's work on the legs nicely. We should think for all body.
Sure.
We have to encourage mind, we have to encourage heart, we have to speak everywhere, we have to
That's
encourage
why we are
our
here.
Head. Yes, it's not only that,
to come from,
yeah,
the,
from top.
From
everywhere. Top is most
because
effective.
Otherwise, you know what happened, what I feel, maybe it's not what I feel personally. And somebody will think, okay, this devotee is doing well, is doing business, maybe he's doing something about my Russia. But nobody told me, my guru didn't tell me. Varnashrama is something that's very theoretical. We have been discussing, but still my duty is to follow the spiritual program. That's it. That's it. Because during the day, no work. Just little service when it's not feeling too sleepy. And just to feel from one prashana to another. Isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm wrong. So maybe I think that should come from Mac, spiritual leaders, you know, this person has to come. These guidelines in which small devotees like me, you know, they can try to take one step after another. And like this, become contagious. Otherwise, won't work. Because I'm trying to do something, some business, and I'm hearing from all sides that I'm a Maya. So, this cannot be, you know, it has to come from up. From down cannot come any much, no much.
You need to answer? Well, you can be Maya whether you do the business
yes.
or not.
Yes, I'm always in Maya, but that's
a separate point.
I think
what you say makes sense, but at the same time, we should not forget why we are here. We may fit into the Varnashram to do the business or to do the work, very hard work, yes. But our ultimate goal is to go back to God. Our ultimate goal is to become spiritual.
Varnashram is meant for this.
Right.
It's not the end.
Right. So this, but this
it's meant
program,
yeah, to help.
Spiritual program
is to where?
It's meant to help. It on its own, Varnashram can't take us back to Godhead. It's simply a code of like rules or lifestyle or culture that supports the practice of Krishna consciousness. It's, you know, it basically means economics. I mean, if you look at it, Brahmachari, what is the economics? He begs, and he lives off of what he gets from the teacher. Then the grihastha, then they have different ways that they get, but they can actively go after money. The vinaprastha also, he lives off of just what comes easily. And the sannyasi also just begs. So it's economics on that side. It's necessary. It must be there. What I'm just saying is following it alone isn't enough, because otherwise many Indians are following very nicely, but they're not becoming God conscious. So you have to do both together.
That's why I feel like I was trying to explain to him that if the basic spiritual program is established, you get your chanting, your 16 rounds, you come to the program, you follow everything nicely, that's the basis from which you understand where you stand, and then you follow whatever service you're doing, then you'll feel satisfied. Isn't it, Maya? Whether you sweep the road or the toilet, or you are the big manager of the temple, or whether you do the arti to the deity, ultimately, you know, because you are engaging your own propensity, and that's for the ultimate goal of spiritual realization and going back to God, if that's the ultimate goal, then you're satisfied. And you can do any of this. And we are seeing, for example, Pankajrang and Janivas, they're doing that all the time, at different times. Sometimes they take the gun and shoot the people. Sometimes they're selling the ladder and making money. Sometimes they clean the place of the deity. Sometimes they're worshipping the deity. They do all the four different activities, but they're transcendental.
Huh? Buy you a drink for that one.
Let me see how many drinks I can get next. I think from one second.
I have become very on this idea of Varnashram. And I was thinking if this court is big enough to establish Varnashram, like to really have a system for Vaishyas to function like they have in the society. It's a very, very big and complex system of input and output and linkages. So I was thinking that in ISKCON, like suppose you have a temple of 100 devotees, then theoretically you would say these 25 devotees, they are the Brahmanas, these 25 are the Kshatriyas, these 25 are the Vaishyas, and 25 are the Kshatriyas. So this sounds really, or if you have a temple of 10 devotees, these two are the Kshatriyas. This represents the Vaishnavas. So it sounds not so organized what really a Varnashram means in a big thing. So I think for this part, at most it would be possible to establish a prototype, but not the real thing. So I think maybe that's one of the ideas also in the mind of the Buddhist. That's how far can you get if you have such a small society to establish Varnashram? On the spiritual level, because mainly Prabhupada, what I heard and what I understood, is he established his cult to create Brahmanas. Because the head of society was not there. So the body without a hand cannot function. So he wanted to establish the head, and then the body would come, the Kshatriyas would come, and everything would come. So mainly our thing was, I mean, his cult was mainly meant to create the Brahmanas. So now it's very the Brahmanas would come. But then to have like Vaishyas and Kshatriyas, I don't see the Kshatriyas. I mean, even from the point of view, Kshatriyas are strong, built, big bodies.
You want to fight with me? This
is something you don't see.
You want to fight?
Okay. But this, then you don't find the only sentimentality. They're completely supposed to be soft hearted and sweet, but it's not a Kshatriya. And then the Vaishyas, there are some Vaishyas, like Vaishyas you see outside big businesses, like multinationals, like these are Vaishyas. I mean, this is not really, I mean, it's not this small. your solution. The point is that something is wrong, then this means no Varnashram, no...
Well, that's the point. I was thinking that at the moment there's no point of Varnashram. For the moment, it's just creating Brahmanas. This world is going to call it Brahmanas. And then if people, if you can guide at least the society, then the Kshatriyas and Vaishyas will come. I think it was the idea of Prabhupada. That you will be guiding, the leaders of society, you will be guiding the Kshatriyas, and they will establish Varnashram. And you will be the head, and you will give instruction to the Kshatriyas, and they will establish.
You have. See, it's not a matter of designating. See, that's the also important, as we discussed before, in the Daiva Varnashram, designations aren't so important. Point is that what the nature is, that's a use. Prabhupada gave example of whatever condition the fruit is in, you use it in that way. You know? If the fruit is green, you make a chutney, and if it's ripe, then you cut it up and offer it like that. So depending upon what is the nature, you engage it. Because as we become purified, then that may develop. You know? So it's not so important that somebody's a kshatriya. No, there's duties to be done. And the point is when you do those, just like you have to manage or administrate or do, you know, something like that, where you have others under your care, like a temple president. But there's a system on how you do that. So if you want to be a temple president, you have the nature to do it, then there's a way to do it, according to the Vedic standards. If one can do it, simply take pure devotional standards, it'll work. Because that's the origin of those Vedic standards. You know? Otherwise, if one doesn't know, then one can study that. One can see how did Yudhishthir, how did Prithu, how did Ranti Dev, how did they run things? So in there, I don't see the qualities he talked about. They're big, this, that, as we mentioned yesterday. It was yesterday we were discussing. Or this morning. If we take the qualities of Yudhishthir, nowadays I think if I said, okay, I have a person, he can manage, but if it's too much problem, you know, if it gets too political, then he doesn't have much material motive. So, you know, if it's between him doing it and someone else doing it, he'll let the other person do it. And he doesn't mind living simply. He doesn't mind sitting all day and discussing about Krishna. He's happy to do that. You know? And, you know, what would you call such a person? What would you say his varna is? Right? They're detached. They're not into getting overly political. They're very gentle by nature. They like hearing Krishna katha. They can live a simple life, you know, like in the forest. How would you call that person?
It could be Vanaprastha.
So what if that was Yudhishthir when he was in exile after the gambling match? You understand? So to take these things, you know, that, you know, Brahman means, you know, heart, you know, a nuclear physicist. Kshatriya means the guy who walks around with an AK-47. You know, Vaishya is someone who just sits on a mountain of grain and smiles ear to ear. And Shudra is a guy with a, you know, jackhammer that just digs in the street. And if we have that idea of Varnashram, it'll be very difficult to apply it. But if we understand what is the mentalities of a kind of work, right? As we discussed before, in the Gita, when Krishna talks about the four varnas, he gets very specific. On the Brahmins and Kshatriyas, he says these are the qualities by which they work. He doesn't say what the work they do. Because they can be doing so many things. Like Drona was teaching martial arts. Right? You might think, well, that's not for a Brahmin. That's a Kshatriya. You know? But he's a Brahmin. Because he works by the Brahminical standards. So a Kshatriya, Yudhishthira, is in the forest, but he still works by the Kshatriya spirit. We get the idea Kshatriya is someone who wants to fight and make trouble and get into politics, and that's, you know, a very materialistic understanding. But that's not what we see the reality of what is given in the Bhagavatam. Rantidev's not like that, you know. Parikit's not like that. Yudhishthira's not like that. You know? If you look at all the kings, none of them are like that. You know? Dhruva even only went out to fight because, you know, if you want to run a kingdom, there must be discipline. And it's considered in the Shastra, worse than killing a Brahmin is killing an emperor. Not a Kshatriya, but an emperor. Because the emperor is protecting all the Brahmins. So if you kill him, then you undermine all the support of all the Brahmins and the whole social structure. So you break down everything by killing the emperor. So that's the worst. Then is killing a Brahmin, and like that. So now these Yakshas, just due to their nastiness and pride, no other reason, just because they consider themselves superior to human beings, because they're from Bhuvar, not from Bhu. You know, they come between the antariksha, between the earth and the heavens. So they have more power than the humans. So they're very proud, very proud. So they've killed the emperor, right? So then, you know, you have to establish something. Otherwise the whole culture will go and everybody will be disturbed and no one will be able to become God conscious. Therefore he goes out and fights with them, right? But it's not fighting in passion, it's duty. Because we see, after he's killing and doing this and that, and big war is going on, then who comes? Brahma? I can't remember who comes. Brahma comes and says, you know, this is not proper, you're a Vaishnava, you should forgive. Oh, okay. Finished. One shloka, it's over. It's not, I want to kill my brother, you know, what is that? No, none of that. Okay. Finished. So they're very peaceful. So generally what I see is that we don't understand what Varnashram is. We don't actually even understand what a Brahminical culture is. Generally, Brahminical culture is just wave some incense and ring some bell. But just that you have a shaved head and you wear tilak and wear a dhoti, that's Brahminical culture. Like that. How we live and do anything is Brahminical culture. How we take our bath in the morning and all this is all Brahminical culture. You know? You look in the deity worship book, in the first and the fifth chapter, on approaching the temple, Abhigamana, and Swadhyaya, or study, and you'll see that is ISKCON. These are the day-to-day nitty-gritty activities devotees do. Right? Take care of guests, you know, associate with devotees, they take prasadam, worship Tulsi, live in the Dham, temple, right? They chant their japa, they hear some Bhagavatam. Right? They get up in the morning, they offer obeisances to their guru, they get up, go to the toilet, clean themselves, brush their teeth, clean the tongue, take the bath, remember the Lord, then put on the tilak, chant the Gayatri, wear the dress of a devotee, wear neck beads, go to the temple, ring the bell, you know, chant the glories of the deities, offer obeisances. No? Doesn't everybody do that? So that's what the Brahmins do. That's it. There's nothing more. There's not something else. That's Pancharatra. So that every devotee is doing. So everyone's following the Brahminical culture. That's established. So now, and we have Brahmacharya's Grihastha Vanaprastha Sannyas, right? We have, everybody's doing this Brahminical. We have some who do specifically occupational duties. They do preaching, they do these different things, puja and that. We have managers, we have those who deal with the fundraising and money and all that, and we have those who help. So Varnashram's already there. It was already established long before Prabhupada left. But what is now to be understood is how it works. Right? Isn't it? Like I can tell you the details of running a business. Business is you buy something cheap, sell it more expensive. Right? Isn't it? That's business. You buy something for less, then you sell it. Right? That's business. You buy something for more than what you sell it, you lose. That's not business. That's all. It's basically that's it. But now the art of that, maybe very in the mood of that and how you deal with the that'll take a long time to explain. You understand? So the Varnashram's already been established. If someone says there is no Varna, that means they don't know what Varnashram is. Because they're only talking externals. But those externals, those are just certain details of application. Business is business, whether you're selling some pawn or you're doing big international business. They're vaishyas. The little man at the corner with his pawn shop, he's also a vaishya. You know, unless it's someone else's shop and he's sitting there and selling it for him. If he's a salesman, he's a shudra. But if it's his business, he's a vaishya. So those principles are there. So the system is already there. Now, the thing to understand is, what did Prabhupada mean? How to apply it, how to run it, how to recognize it, how to interact. That's very difficult. Right? The Dharma Shastras, none of them tell you how to run your business. The Dharma Shastras don't tell you how to manage a kingdom. The art of management, the art of business. The Dharma Shastras don't tell you how to do any of the arts, like carpentry or engineering or things like that. They don't tell you, you know, how to learn and study the Vedas and all these different things. What they do is tell you what your duties are within that. What are your personal duties? How you relate with others. How you must respect others. How does a Brahmin deal with a Kshatriya? A Brahmin with this one. Now, how does everyone deal with the Kshatriya? How do they deal with the emperor? How do you deal with a thief? So it's social interaction. So that's what's missing. You know, what's the big deal of business? If someone's a Vaishya, I give you 100 rupees, you'll buy 100 rupees worth of goods and sell it for 150 rupees. Right? Isn't it? Then you take that 150, invest that, and then you'll end up with 300. Then, because you're intelligent, you check the markets, this and that, then you'll sell the 300 rupees and you'll sell it for 1,000. Then you'll figure out that you've been ripped off all this time, and you were buying what you bought, you know, 300 rupees worth of mall. Another guy is the guy behind him. He's the middleman. And you can buy it, instead of 300, you can buy it for 250. Now you make more profit. Right? And this way you go, and then after 5-6 years you find out you've been buying from the 7th middleman, and you finally find out that the guy who actually makes it is over in this village there, and then instead of buying it for 300 rupees you get it for 50 rupees. Then you really start doing business. But the Dharma Shastras don't talk about that. That's art that you learn from another businessman. You know, the Gurukul doesn't teach that to Vaishyas. They teach them Vedic culture. Then they go learn business from their father or uncle or, you know, someone from the community. They teach the principles and the knowledge by which you run a kingdom. But how you actually run it, you learn from the king, from the ministers, from the Rajguru, from other managers. You know? Only the Brahmin learns and practices what he will do as occupational duty in the Gurukul. Everyone else only learns the theory. Like that. So therefore, then those who can work within that, work in the society in that way.